Bears a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure MVP and a Microsoft Azure architect, helping people move to Microsoft Azure and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane.
Contact us by email.
Feedback@needtoknow.cloud. It's your destination for anything Microsoft Cloud, including Azure and Office 365.
And Office 365.
And Office 365.
We're back for another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and again, Mark Keane on the other side of the microphone. Welcome, Mark.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad. We're back after a lovely Australia Day holiday for us Australians in the middle of the week, which is always a very good thing because most people take the Friday off.
That's right. We're recording it on the day after Australia Day, and it's episode 129.
My God, we're pumping these out. Is there a reason that we're pumping so many episodes out so quickly?
I don't know, because we're just loving it so much. It's like you do something regularly. The more regularly you do it, it just becomes second nature to you. I mean, we're actually not awake right now. We're doing it in our sleep.
So your role has changed from being Azure architect to being marketeer, has it?
Pretty much. And your role has changed from being Office 365 MVP to podcast extraordinaire.
Right. I like to see a change of role. So 2017 brings about a change, but... one thing that doesn't change, I think, is our news that's coming from Microsoft. And if you'll allow me, I think I'll kick off with something that we both are probably a little bit chuffed about, is that Microsoft's commercial cloud run rate is exceeding $14 billion. I mean, it's a pretty good run rate, and Azure's growing pretty quickly, isn't it?
Yeah. You stole my thunder. I had exactly the same news item here. But anyway, go on.
No, you continue. I've handed it off to you. You please continue.
Okay, well, I've got here, they announced financial year quarter two 2017 earnings results. So $24.1 billion and the operating income $6.2 billion. Net income was $5.2 billion GAAP and $6.5 billion non-GAAP. Revenue in Intelligent Cloud was $6.9 billion. This increased 8%. Server products and cloud services revenue increased 12%. Azure revenue increased... This is what I like. I'll say it again. Azure revenue increased 93%.
Yeah, it's not a pretty good...
Wow.
It's not a pretty good run rate, the old Azure, isn't it?
And check this out. With Azure Compute usage more than doubling year over year. Oh, that's awesome. Music to my ears. Enterprise services revenue decreased 4% with declines in customer support agreements offset by the growth of premier support services and consulting. Server products and revenue grew 5% with server products premium revenue growing in double digits. And more info to that will be in the show notes.
Good. So again, it's good and positive to see that Microsoft is meeting market expectations. It's an indication of more people moving to the cloud. I think when you combine that probably with AWS figures, it shows you how much that everybody is moving their on-premises equipment into the cloud. I'm certainly getting more and more requests for that myself and more requirements. So again, it certainly belies the fact that it generally is a very, very popular trend now, isn't it?
Yep, exactly. And also to I think the two front runners are definitely AWS and Azure for sure, 100%. And they're well on the lead, and not knowing what the number one is at the moment, but they're pretty much close, aren't they?
Well, I think part of it is that AWS obviously has had a lead, has been in the market for a longer time, but my understanding is that Azure's on a faster run rate. So it's obviously growing faster than AWS, and obviously it has a very large market to pull from, the Microsoft environment. So wouldn't be surprising if, again, they soon get pretty close to each other, and Google bringing up a distant third, I would say, but again, it's going to continue to grow as well. So it seems that the market's going to be distributed between three major players, and it certainly seems at the moment that Azure is the fastest growing of the three.
Yeah, so Google apparently is opening a data center in Sydney.
Yeah, I think that Google's word on that is I'm not sure that they actually tell you where your data is stored. They just open a data center and put it into the pool, if you want to know. But again, I'm no Google expert, and I think their offerings are slightly different the way they've gone about things than Azure. But I think it's obviously another offering that a lot of companies will take up.
So here we go. It says here on the internet, I just searched for it. Happy to announce the newest cloud region, Tokyo, Japan. And then throughout 2017, continuing to expand, adding 8 new regions, Sydney, Sao Paulo, Brazil, Frankfurt in Germany, Mumbai, India, Singapore, London, Hermina in Finland, and Northern Virginia, United States. So there you go. So it'll be sometime this year the Sydney doors will open up for business.
Yeah, interesting. So again, it would seem to suggest that you certainly need to be with one of the big three players. I think the preference obviously is we would agree that Microsoft is the better offering when you look at all the options that are available and what can be done with it, but indication that that is certainly the way that business is going when it comes to IT.
So other things in the news, as in for Azure, now there's the ability to have your monthly Azure invoice statement, which has always been a hassle. You can have it easily emailed to you. It's now generally available direct from the Azure portal. So as the account admin, you can navigate to your subscription via portal.azure.com. Select Send My Invoice on the left navigation bar, and then from here, accept the opt-in agreement, and you're all set. So yeah, it's pretty cool. So you can see all your invoices, your past invoices, you can send them all to you in one hit. So have a bit of a play. By the way, it only applies to subscriptions in the direct channel. EA or CSB subscriptions will not be leveraged to this feature, unfortunately. But anyway, it's still a big plus because we didn't have that visibility before. It was very much sort of in the dark, sort of what was happening behind the scenes and getting access to the invoices.
Something that you may also be very pleased about when it comes to Office 365 is that the new OneDrive for Business Sync client has finally gone GA. So that means it will be rolling out to all customers. That's correct. You'll get the latest new client, which allows you to synchronize team sites, much larger amounts of data, and much more reliable, and also get activity feeds. So that has now come out. So if you haven't got it as yet, you haven't downloaded it, which you can do manually, it will be pushed out as part of your Office on the Desktop update when that happens. But that has now started rolling out. And even more
I've got a question.
Hang on. You've got even one more fantastic option, is that the Mac client is also being updated and available. Questions.
Love their work.
Questions from the floor.
Questions from the floor. The question is, do you remember back in the day where the OneDrive Sync client, because I know it does both now, it does OneDrive for Business and OneDrive as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it does a number of different things. They're consolidating, they haven't quite finished it, but they are consolidating them into a single Sync client for the desktop.
Okay, so the bit that I'm really miss, and they took it away, and a lot of whingers whinged basically about it, was the fact that, let's say you've got, like me, you've got nearly a terabyte of data.
Let me just shortcut this. The answer is, it's coming.
You mean the little
placeholders, they're called.
Placeholders, yes.
Correct. So Microsoft, in their roadmap, which they announced in at Ignite in the US in September, they certainly have on their roadmap to put in the ability to have placeholders. So these are markers for on-prem that basically let you know the file is currently in the cloud. You double click on it, it will open it, download it in the background, allow you to use it. Now, part of the thing I think that my understanding is they're working on is also basically a timeout feature. So you click on a file, download it, work on it. Most people then probably never use the file again for months and months and months. It doesn't make sense for it to stay on your
that's a good idea.
So I think they're coming up with the ability for you to be able to say, right, if I haven't accessed that file within 30 days, basically move it back to the cloud and again give me a placeholder on-prem. So they are building some real smarts into this, but as yet it's on the roadmap, but they haven't announced it. But part of the OneDrive thing is too, is that it's far more than sync now. It's got a lot of great features coming down the pipeline that they're announcing. So I think that this is the beginning, obviously, of a lot of really good features and unique features for the sync client that's really going to help it stand out from its competition. So make sure that you, if you haven't got that, you do get that shortly. Now, another thing that we have now is an activity feed. So what that means is if you open Word, Excel, PowerPoint, you can actually go in and look at the activity that's been happening on the document. So if you've got a document in a team site, multiple people accessing it, you can go into your Word, Excel, PowerPoint that are stored in SharePoint or OneDrive for Business, and you'll be able to see who's edited your file, updated it, changed it, done all that sort of stuff. So that is built into SharePoint Online, but is now being rolled out to the applications on the desktop. One more from me is that we're also get the really cool app Office Lens. Hopefully you've seen and used Office Lens, have you, Mark?
Use it every single day. It's brilliant. But the only thing that it annoys me about it is the fact that when you upload the photo straight away to, say, OneDrive, it doesn't give you an option to select a folder. It just uploads it to the root folder of OneDrive, and then you've got to move it later.
So what we've got now is they've also integrated it with Android, and they're also rolling the Office Lens into the OneDrive mobile app client. So rather than having to go to OneDrive and then go to Office Lens, then upload to OneDrive, you've got to get a OneDrive app, take a photo, and upload it straight into there.
So you can go straight to the folder where you want it to be, click on the button for Office Lens. Oh, yeah, cool. It's so that's the same thing in reverse.
Correct. So that's all rolling out as well. We should see that update your mobile apps to make sure. But lots and lots of other Office 365 stuff. But have you got any more Azure news?
Yeah, Azure Analysis Services now available in North Central US and Brazil South. So last October, Microsoft released the preview of Azure Analysis Services, which was built on the proven analytics engine of Microsoft SQL Server Analysis Services. With Azure Analysis Services, you can host semantic data models in the cloud. Users in your organization can then connect to your data models using tools like Excel, Power BI, and many others to create reports and perform ad hoc data analysis. Now, you probably think that this sounds like I've mentioned this before recently. You're right, because just last time around, we informed people of the announcement that Azure Analysis Services was available in two regions in Southeast Asia and East US. But Microsoft have now announced again that the preview of Azure Analysis Services are now available in two additional regions. So now it's available in lots of places, including North Central US, Brazil South, there's West US. I won't go through the whole lot. We'll put the details in the show notes. But basically, within 2 weeks, they've had two announcements as such. The fact that it's come out to four regions in total within the space of 2 weeks. So they're really hammering that hard.
Good to hear. One more thing that's sort of Office 365 related is Microsoft have announced a Microsoft Dynamics 365 roadmap. So if you go to roadmap.dynamics.com, you'll basically get a list of all the new features, all the functionality that is rolling out thanks to Dynamics 365. So Dynamics 365 is Microsoft's, I suppose, business products, things like general ledger, purchase to manage your business, that will be integrated with Office 365, available in some countries already, but should be rolling out to Australia in full strength probably May to June this year. But if you want to see what's on the roadmap, again, roadmap.dynamics.com.
Oh, nice. And another one from me, loading data into Azure SQL Data Warehouse just got much easier. So Azure SQL Data Warehouse is a SQL-based, fully managed, petabyte-scale cloud solution for data warehousing. SQL Data Warehouse is a highly elastic engine enabling you to provision in minutes and scale to capacity in seconds. Since announcing the general availability of Azure SQL Data Warehouse in July 2016, Microsoft are helping people get data into their data warehouse much faster to generate insights faster and grow businesses further. The way they're doing this is by using Polybase, a feature built on their SQL engine. It effectively leverages the entire massively parallel processing architecture of Azure SQL Data Warehouse to provide the fastest loading mechanism from Azure Blob Storage into the Data Warehouse. You can use Azure Data Factory Copy Wizard to load 1 terabyte of data in under 15 minutes into Azure SQL Data Warehouse at over 1.2 gigabits per second throughput. That's massively quick. More details of that in the show notes.
All right, so we are pretty full up for news. We've got a lot of episodes that we need to roll out for people. A little bit of thanks that we do need to throw in here is to Zencastr. We use the Zencastr app to record our audio locally and then make sure that is as pristine as possible, and then Mark does all his magic with it to bring it to you. So again, we thank Zencastr for that tool and really recommend that to people who are looking to do
thanks,
the same thing.
Zencastr.
Yeah, thanks Zencastr. Well, we have a very short time period before we have Ignite Australia, which you will be going to, catching up with people. But before that, we do have a lot of people to get through. And this episode, we'll be talking to John Liu, focusing on the speakers from the Microsoft event at the Gold Coast Ignite coming up shortly. And I'm joined by, or we're joined by, MVP John Liu. John, welcome.
Hello. Hello, Robert and Mark.
Hello, John. I don't think we've met before. Do you want to tell myself and everybody in the whole entire world exactly who you are, where you're from, what you do, your work history, your favorite color, star sign, and all the rest?
Wow. Okay. I'm based
or some
in
of it.
Sydney.
Some of it.
I'm based in Sydney. I'm previously a SharePoint MVP, but now an Office and Friends MVP. And I'm based in Sydney. What else? I mainly do development work. So I've recorded a previous session with Robert on, I think it was SharePoint 2013 workflows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, and so back then we were talking about workflows and I was saying, oh, try using Visual Studio to do some workflow. But my background is development from ASP.NET and then to SharePoint.
Development is SharePoint. The future.
Depends on
yeah,
who you
development
talk to.
Is the future. Yeah.
But I do. I am a developer, so I do. I do agree. And what else? What were the other questions? Favorite color. Currently is blue. It seems to change.
Okay. Yeah, that's my favorite color too.
Is that because it's Microsoft color? I don't know. I'm just sucking.
And the
up
other one was your star sign.
But you don't
have to answer that question. Okay.
We've got very personal. I think we need to get this back on track and focus on technology. So what we are here to talk to about today is John's giving a presentation at the upcoming Microsoft event on the Gold Coast, and the topic is serverless in Office 365, build services with Azure Functions. So, John, do you want to give us a bit of an overview as to what the session is about and basically who you think should be coming along to it?
Okay, so there's this buzzword. It's probably a buzzword of the year for 2017, and that's serverless. And serverless really isn't about no server. But it's more about, the servers are not your concern. So Microsoft is responsible for server, or Azure is responsible for the server, and you just want a function or you want a piece of code, and you put this code inside Azure Functions, and it will be run. So my talk is specifically focused on these functions as a service, but relating to the SharePoint and Office 365 platform, so along the productivity space. And when I initially planned the topic, it was going to be a developer talk, so we will talk about C# and as well as JavaScript, so you can use these different languages within these functions. So the idea was we're going to write some C# code and some JavaScript code to access, your SharePoint and Office 365. But later, as planning goes on, I realized that, oh, you can use PowerShell inside a Azure function. And that connects very well to a lot of the open source PowerShell for Office 365 that Microsoft has been putting out. So all the pattern and practice PowerShell that they've given out, that can all be run in Azure functions. So with that angle, I think there is a very strong story even for IT pros to say, hey, do you want to automate something? That PowerShell that you will run on your local machine, you could put that PowerShell inside Azure function, and now you can hook that up to some event. So essentially you have like a if this then that, but if this then that, the that is a really powerful PowerShell that you will run.
Okay, so basically, John, that sounds really good because I'm an IT pro and I do a lot of PowerShell, so I'm not a lot of developer. But the functions part, and you explaining the fact that yes, now you can use PowerShell on a function, that's like really beneficial to me as a PowerShell person and running a lot of automation tasks is what I love doing. Now, isn't there like a similarity between Azure functions and say Azure automation, or are they different? What's the similarity between the two?
I'm actually not very familiar with Azure automation.
Okay, so Azure automation is like a from what I understand from you explaining Azure functions, it's more of like a runbook that runs on. They spin up some virtual machines and it runs. You can set scheduled tasks to run some PowerShell as a runbook, like similar to just like a bunch of PowerShell. It'll just run at whatever time. So like for example, I've got Azure Automation runbooks set up in my environment that run every, say, Sunday night to spin up a bunch of virtual machines. And inside of that Azure Automation account, you can set up, say, variables and things like that. So username and password, it calls the username and password when it needs it to log into, say, Azure. And the username and password are set in say, variables and things in the Azure Automation account. But with the Azure functions, is that essentially all it is? You basically write your PowerShell wherever, and you stick it into a function. Can you do the scheduling and all that sort of stuff? Did you want to give us an example?
Yeah. So the idea of Azure functions, and you know, I use these words interchangeably: the word serverless, the word function as a service, or just Azure functions. Really, the idea is that you just, as a developer, you just want the service to run a bit of code for you. So the code typically has some sort of trigger, right? Something triggered this function to run. The trigger, the three common ones that people understand, there's a HTTP trigger. So essentially it gives you a HTTPS URL that you can call with some parameters. Or it could be triggered by a cron job. So you could define a cron, like a schedule task. So you could say repeat this every Tuesday and whatnot. And the third common one is a queue. So from Azure storage queue, you could say, hey, whenever there is something in this queue, then run my function and take that element out of the queue. And then, you know, you can channel with other pieces like flow that could take some event and populate that queue. So that's the triggering part. And then within the function, it's really just trying to run your code. So the goal of function was not specifically to just run PowerShell, like it's to run your code. And it doesn't really matter whether your code is JavaScript, C#, or in this case, PowerShell.
Can you give us a common example of a function you've set up or a function that you've used for you know, customers or whatever? What's a common scenario to run this through so people, listeners, can get an idea of, you know, the practicalities of where you'd actually use this configuration?
Sure. So there are really two ideas of what your functions can do. Like So of course you could build functions that are really long and really complicated that take a long time to run. But in general, the idea is you write, you know, simpler functions. And you can even say these, some of the functions are designed to retrieve data. Maybe you're running an anonymous website and you want to call an endpoint that could pull back some authenticated data. So you have your function pull that data and kind of feed it back to your public site. So that's kind of an example of pulling some data. For say something that, you know, your function that does some sort of action, a good example I have, and this is one of the demos I plan to show, is in the pattern practice PowerShell, you have PowerShell command lines that will help you create, say, a new SharePoint site or even a new Office 365 group. And then you can apply SharePoint site templates onto that template. So it's an XML file that you pretty much stamp onto that newly created blank site. And you could wrap that all that PowerShell, and this is, we're talking about something like four or five lines of PowerShell, put that all into a function, and then you suddenly have a really powerful web service that could, you know, provision a website using an account that is stored within the function. So you know, outside of the function, you don't see what that account is, right? So once you have this such a function, you can then decide how are you going to trigger it. You could have Flow, Microsoft Flow, which is their new workflow product, that could trigger a function very easily. Or you can even call it directly from a Power App as well. So under a Power App button, you could say, hey, send these two text boxes over to my Azure Function endpoint as arguments, and then your function will run these five lines of PowerShell and build you a SharePoint site. And it's all kind of, it's really magical.
So with Microsoft Flow, that's very exciting, because Microsoft Flow is like Zapier and If This Then That, which are other web automation tools on the internet. It's the Microsoft version, and a friend of mine was setting Flow up for some social media automation, and he showed me some screenshots of the whole thing. Now it's a fairly powerful product, and you know what, I like the whole option, the whole way you can incorporate the Azure functions into it. So for example, it pulls something from the source, you can then kick off an Azure function, for example, you can massage that data to how you want, and then you basically send it across to the target. So am I right in saying that, say, Microsoft Flow, because of that whole function integration, is much, much, much more powerful than If This and That and Zapier and so forth?
I see it as two pieces that work really well together. And even with If This and That, you can call an Azure function. But one pattern that's come up quite frequently now is, say you have a flow within Microsoft Flow, what's a good example? Okay, so say in the new SharePoint list, you create a flow, and then you say, okay, when someone modifies this list, I want to run my flow. And your flow could easily work with the list and pull out the fields that you want and form a JSON kind of data structure, and then call the Azure function. And one of the patterns emerges, rather than calling the function directly via an open URL that's kind of on the internet, you could just put that JSON object directly into Azure Q. So that's kind of like a hidden, you have your hidden key, that's, so you know, your message doesn't go through the open internet. You write the message directly to a queue, and then the queue may trigger an Azure function separately, and there's some failover, and you will try to you will do a retry as well, and so on. So that's also quite a common pattern that's appeared. So yes, more flexibility. I think if this and that and flow are kind of the whole event and do something, whereas Azure function gives you the way to write your own code, right? Then you know, suddenly there's a whole lot more things you could do.
So are we saying that with the what we're talking about here is, can the Azure function reach into and run just about any aspect of Azure? So could we, for example, you know, run something in a run up a virtual machine? Could we go to Azure storage? Could we go to potentially machine learning? I mean, is that the power of it, that these Azure functions can basically reach across to all our Azure resources? And secondly, is it also possible to tie this back to doing something on premises as well? I mean, obviously there are some limitations around that, but does it give us that ability with the code to not only take advantage of Azure resources, but also on-premises resources? Is that possible?
Yes, so two questions. First one is the Azure function, PowerShell, is it? Sorry, yeah, Azure resources.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had a chat with the Azure function team, and they were quite excited. They say when they first got the PowerShell, so PowerShell supporting Azure functions currently is in preview. The JavaScript and the C# is GA, so those are, you know, public versions. PowerShell is a second, there's a group of languages that are still in preview, and PowerShell is one of them. But they were very excited to tell me, they say, when they first got PowerShell working in Azure Functions, immediately they threw all the Azure PowerShell in it. Because, you know, the Azure Function team is inside the Azure team, and they do also spin up a lot of Azure VMs and shut them down and go and make this and make that. So they do all these in PowerShell, and now they have functions to trigger to run their PowerShell to do all these steps. So that's definitely possible, and in fact used by the team themselves.
Okay.
The second question regarding
the on-prem. Can we do on-prem as well?
So with that story, they tell me that not sure whether it's on the roadmap or whether I think it may be something that the Azure team is doing, but they tell me that there is this concept of a on-premises gateway, so you can connect Azure to your on-premises. So the function, the PowerShell is still running in Azure, but it could see your on-premises server. Does that make sense?
Yep, that does. So there's like gateways into like Power BI and all those sort of things. So just another gateway, basically, to allow you to reach into local. It's pretty powerful when you think about
that's,
it.
Well, yeah, so
also, remote PowerShell is the other way you could do it, is if you're running PowerShell in the function, you can remote PowerShell back to an endpoint, HTTPS endpoint on-premise, and then kick something off that way.
Yeah. So I was talking to them. They say the Azure PowerShells are, you know, that they're using that. They know of people using it for Link, for setting up Sky for Business, so the Link PowerShells. I'm using it for SharePoint Online and Office 365, and mainly through the pattern practice PowerShell. Not sure. Yeah, so it's very cool. PowerShell is quite interesting. I'm mainly a developer. In fact, I probably would not have been using this much PowerShell without Azure Function, but I find it really easy because PowerShell is like a wrapper around C#. So there's all these C# libraries underneath the hood that it's using. Additionally, there's a lot of commandlets that help, PowerShell commandlets, yeah, that helps you convert from XML to C# objects to JSON. There's a convert to JSON and convert from JSON, and that's just really powerful. If you're in one PowerShell line, you're pulling back a list item, and the next line you convert it to a JSON object, and then off you go. And these will be done in two lines, whereas if you're writing your C#, you will say, okay, then let me find a serializer, let me push it to a stream, and then I'm gonna get some sort of, it's like four or five lines before you get a JSON object. So PowerShell is, I think it's, you know, I started by looking at it saying, okay, this is more of IT Pro too. But even as a developer, I'm appreciating how easy it is to read PowerShell and say, hey, this is really, it looks really simple. For my own personal struggle is because I don't do a lot of PowerShell to start with, so I often get the syntax wrong, you know, just a little bit. And then I'm thinking, oh, why is it not running? But then, you know, once you figure it out and get that working, it's really simple to read. Yeah,
I bet you I know someone who can probably help. I think I know someone who can help you with your PowerShell woes there, John.
Yeah,
cool. Maybe. Yeah, I think I might know somebody too.
Yeah.
But it's funny you should say that, because I'm sort of like the opposite. I know quite a bit about PowerShell. I wouldn't say I'm an expert, because who is an expert at anything? And you never call yourself an expert, because you open yourself right up for... Anyway, so I do know a lot about PowerShell, but when it comes to C#, it's the opposite of you, where I'm trying to sort of get into that type of... world, is to learn that sort of stuff. But what I wanted to ask you, because we're sort of getting sort of into the podcast now, and I wanted to come back to the Ignite session that you're doing now. Your Ignite session, people that are coming to that session, what do you think would be one of the biggest things that people will get out of that session just by coming? What's the takeaway sort of thing?
I would the biggest thing I would like to show is how easy it is to get going. That's really, you know, and I think developers may think about Node.js and C#, but I think probably developers and IT pros will both look at it and say, well, the PowerShell stuff is really powerful and really simple. So that's the main thing I want to get going. Kind of the ending, I would like to talk about costs. Because, you know, in development, building this small responsibility, these, microservices, right? So your server is trying not to do everything. You just do a small function, and that's your sole job. This is a good pattern for architecture, but generally, we don't write code like this, because we're trying to write a whole app. We don't, in our head, split it up into 100 functions and then write them separately. So... the serverless kind of buzzword, or these functions as a service, is kind of a system that's now available to run your functions really cheaply, right? So if you think about this question, I asked you to, you want to run a 5-line PowerShell against Office 365. How much do you expect to pay?
Maybe about 20 cents.
20 cents? Robert?
Well, the other way you could do it is run up a machine. They're going to pay more to run the machine up.
Yeah, exactly. But say you can't run it on your local machine. You got to run it somewhere. How much do you expect to pay? Right? And let's say PowerShell runs for 20 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, for that small amount of time, I'd expect it to be free. I mean, it's basically depending on what it's doing. But, yeah, look, I understand it, you know, wouldn't be free. But for that small amount of what it's doing, yeah, I would personally expect it to be for free.
Yeah. So Azure Functions has a consumption plan, and it's quite generous in the free bucket. So I've been running functions mainly for demos, but also for a lot of test sites, and I never hit that limit. I will figure out what that limit is. I will remember what that limit is by Ignite. I don't remember by now.
I think we can look it up on the Azure site, it's a good bucket. But I think the thing is again, what we need to appreciate is the world. One of the things we've changed here are the two important things I think that I try and get across to people is first that Azure's basically taken all the components of what we had on prem, broken them up and made them individual services that you basically buy and pay on a consumption basis. So, for example, the domain controller was, you know, security, was, you know, potentially storage, plus group policy, a whole lot of things. So Azure's broken those up into individual services. You just buy and pay for what you need. Same thing here with Azure Functions. You just pay for what you need, and you obviously pay on the runtime rather than it running, having to run a server 24/7. So again, we've moved to this ultimate consumption world where you pay for exactly what you need. And sure, you may be paying for, inverted commas, things that you weren't paying for before, but the reality is that you're able to pick and choose, and then, like I said, shut down services and only consume what you need when you need. So this is certainly a new world. And again, I think the challenge is on the pricing, John, is that actually saying, okay, how much to a customer, how much is this going to cost me as a customer? How much would you charge a customer? How much is it going to cost in their Azure tenant? that's probably the biggest challenge, is to say, okay, I've got a whole lot of these functions, I've got a whole lot of this automation. At the end of the day, is it going to be a dollar, is it going to be $5, or is it going to be $500? And that's where some of the challenges lie, I would assume.
Yeah. So for me, a function, so I kind of group out all my functions, look at how many ran, and then divided by the cost, it comes down to about 2 cents per function. So that's kind of the idea you look at. And you know, there was a point where I kind of watch my Azure free credits and think, oh, it's end of the month, I'm probably running out, I should probably make sure all my VMs are turned off. Now I don't run any VMs, I just run as many functions as I can, and I've never hit that limit. So that's really a change of mindset for me, that, you know, it's almost like, and especially say in the SharePoint space, I used to customize on the server. But now in Office 365, Microsoft says nobody can touch a server. You have to run all your code outside of the server. And to me, Azure Functions is like it's born for this type of solution, that I need some hard server-side code. I'm going to put it away in Azure Functions. And then the rest of my code is UI code. That's just JavaScript sitting on the web page. So yeah, that's I really like it's like the back end piece of this overall customization puzzle, and I'm really so excited about it.
Are you going to be doing any demos at your in your session in relation to setting up functions and running through a few scenarios so people can see them, or pre-recorded demos?
Yeah, so I plan to do a few demos around. I'm still chopping them down, but I think C# and Node.js, I'll just show one. And then I might do a couple on PowerShell, because PowerShell is, you look at it and it's like, oh, that looked really simple. And so it's almost like, here's a PowerShell function, 6 lines, and we're just gonna run it. And then we're gonna run another one. And then maybe look at how Flow connects to functions and how Power Apps. I don't want to make it a Power Apps and Flow session. There are several of those sessions at Ignite as well. So I mainly want to just show that it's possible and not really, you know, dive into what all that piece is about.
There's a whole bunch of stuff.
There's also the angle from, you know, Microsoft started talking about bot framework. Like, the idea of the bots are around for a long time, but what they've done is, in fact, they build this on top of Azure Functions. They let you build your bots sitting on top of Azure Functions and basically responding to chat events. So the bot, maybe using language processing, will turn your text into JSON, essentially. Right? You type some sort of free text, it picks out which are the entities in that conversation, turns that into a JSON, and then you can pass that directly to the function that you map it to, right? So imagine you have several functions, create a site, create a new user to the company, and you tie it up to a bot that you can just chat to and say, hey, make Zhong Liu 2, and it just makes that person. You can see that happening? That's crazy.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I just think this is, yeah, I think it's, anyway, I'm so excited. I think you probably hear that through my voice.
Right, so while John's at the peak of his excitement, why don't we step back just one step and talk about the Ignite conference in general and get your feedback, John. So you've been to a number of Ignite TechEd sessions obviously an attendee and now as a speaker.
Yeah.
You know, what's your sort of feedback on the events? Who should go? And again, if you're sitting on the fence trying to decide whether it's worthwhile going, you know, what are the major reasons or the takeaways that you're going to get from going to a big tech conference like Ignite? You know, share some of your experiences and what you would recommend about that as an event that people should attend.
So, I really like Ignite because it has several additional streams than normally I go to very specific, say, Office 365 conference. So the streams will be around, you know, I guess an area that I'm very comfortable in. But Ignite is where there are a lot more streams that I could get my hands on. In fact, I think if I go to Ignite, I'm going to avoid the Office 365 streams because I probably know those content, and go to the other streams. Like the bot framework I talk about, I will probably be hunting around for some, you know, those are the pieces that I don't know. What else? Yeah, bot framework. I'm looking forward to some sort of sessions on that. Probably I want to go and attend more Azure sessions. So I guess no one could possibly know everything in this space. And I'm thinking, okay, I know a lot more about Office 365 space than say the Azure space. So I'm probably going to spend more time in that stream as well. So I like how much breadth of content that there is in Ignite. Yeah, so I think that's a big reason.
I'll ask a question because we're sort of coming near to the end. We have to wrap it up shortly. But with Ignite, it is it goes for about 4 days a week. It is a very long day. It does sort of take it out of you. It's very strenuous. In your experience of being at a massive event like that, what's the best advice you can give to really improve your stamina and getting through the day?
I think you should write more JavaScript when back in your hotel. That's what I think. No, you know, the best advice is get an early night's sleep, but nobody does that. Everyone's out. Because a lot of times we don't meet the experts, unless when we're all at these type of events. So you feel like, oh, I have to go out and socialize and then, you know, maybe get some time to ask some questions that I'm having. So it's hard, I think. So the good advice is get a good night's sleep, wake up early, refreshed, and if you're a jogger, go for a run. Then you'll be nice and fresh. I don't know. I think there's also some crazy drinking late in the night, so I can't. Try to wake up early.
All right, so I think that probably what we need to do is, like Mark says, look at rounding off for today. Thank John very much for his time and his information, and encourage you, obviously, to attend his session. If you're going to Ignite, make contact with him. I'm sure he'd love to hear from you, any questions you've got. But John, if people want to get in contact with you before or after the event, or ask you any questions, or get more detail on what we're spoken about today, how can they do that? How can they get in contact with you?
So they can contact me on my email, john.liu@sharepointgurus.net. And I'll give you that email as well, Robert.
Excellent. All right. I'll make sure that's all in the show notes, plus what we've mentioned today. Mark, anything else from you?
No, not at this point. John, thank you very much for coming on. Thanks for your time this morning. I know we all lead very, very busy lives. And I'll definitely make a point in coming to say hello to you at Ignite. And if I do have time, I'll pop my head into your session and come and see how the whole Azure Functions things works in more detail.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Robert.
No problems. Thank you very much, John. I thank my co-host, Mark. I'm sure that Mark can help John with his PowerShell if required on the day. So there's an incentive to go and see both of them together in the one room. Otherwise, thank you very much for taking the time to listen.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.